Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. A man who has a major role in events in Ferguson after the shooting death of Michael Brown, public relations specialist Delvin James. He was brought in by the city for his special expertise in the area of diversity and to develop a community engagement strategy. Not an easy assignment. It didn't last long. The curtain came down a matter of weeks later when he was fired. How it all evolved and how he handled it is detailed in his book, Inside Ferguson, A Voice for the Voiceless. Devin James joins us in studio. Great to have you with us. Thanks so much for coming by.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Well, when you look back a year and a half ago, I guess it's been now, how do you think of it? Do you think of it the same way now as you did when you wrote the book?
Yeah. I mean, I think everything that I did from a good place. I think that we put the right things in place for us to be able to assess the situation. So I still stand by the way I felt and the moves that I recommended.
I had the impression reading the book, and I did read it, and I enjoyed reading it. But I had the feeling coming out of it, Devin, that you're very, very angry about that whole incident.
Yeah, I mean, I think my frustration is felt through the book. I definitely feel like there was a lot of politics played and a lot of people who, you know, were in positions of power that didn't do what was best for the community. They didn't do what was best for the people that were trying to help them either. And so, I wanted to voice that frustration.
And what sort of a response have you had?
From various folks in the community and everybody who's actually taken the time to read it, I've gotten very positive responses. People tell me that they're inspired by, you know, my efforts, and there are folks who think that there are lessons to be learned in terms of, like, leadership and integrity. It's been very positive reviews.
Not a lot of positive comment, though, about a lot of the people that you had to deal with, and particularly Ferguson city officials. I mean, it really came down quite hard on them. Whether it's justified or not, it still came out that way.
Well, I think I told my version of my truth, you know. Okay. So, that is basically what I was trying to maintain within the tone of my book and, basically the way I felt. I wasn't trying to sugarcoat anything, so.
I also had the feeling in reading it that you felt that you were treated unfairly.
Yeah, I think that, if you look at the situation and as a whole, the black community was mistreated. So I think I was another one of the victims in that particular process, yeah.
Talk a little bit more about the frustration in dealing with city officials and public relations firms that you were dealing with, media that you were dealing with. I mean, quite frankly, you didn't seem to have a lot of use for them in the book.
I just think that, you have to take consideration with, you know, how important this body of work was. And I think there was just so many people who focused on things that didn't matter. You know, there were egos, there was old mentalities and so many other things that were getting in the way of the changes that needed to take place. So I think a lot of the folks that I had to work with and in, you know, just different leadership capacities, they were just ill-equipped to deal with the cultural issues.
What about your own ego?
I think that, you know, I was called in for a reason. I think that, you know, in this particular scenario, my ego wasn't really a factor because what I was trying to do was voice the frustration from the community. A lot of the offenses that were created and there were basically a result of policies and procedures and things that other folks were doing were impacting real people's lives. And it's like nobody took that frustration or that concern into the meetings. Nobody took that into the planning. And so, you know, I don't think that it was a situation about my ego. It was more so like, you know, Martin Luther King said it best, the protests are the voice of the unheard. You know, there's nobody at the table or there's nobody creating an opportunity for the black community to sit at the table in the meetings that mattered. And then, you know, there's no one listening to the person that's trying to communicate for them. So,
well, the reason I asked that question is because I had the feeling in going and reading the book that everything was okay as long as people agreed with you. And if they didn't agree with you, they were on your hit list.
No, well, first, I never had a hit list, so I think that's
a general term.
Yes, definitely a mischaracterization.
Whatever, on whatever list we might want to call it.
It's definitely a mischaracterization, but you know, I think that, you know, again, if I'm the only person in the room who has the cultural awareness or the ability to communicate effectively or consider that we need to have a trauma-informed approach as we relate to these different issues, then I need to be considered as a valuable resource. And that's the reason why I was brought in there. So I think that, you know, when you consider that nobody was listening, and then you look at the fact that the DOJ reports and lawsuits support the very things that I was suggesting and the very plan that I turned over on various facets of reform and change that needed to take place, it doesn't seem like my ego or you know, me being supported by what I said was the priority. The community and their needs and the changes that needed to be made were the priority.
Well, in terms of do you feel that your job was to represent the community? I mean, you were hired by the city to represent the city's needs.
Well, I wasn't hired by the city.
Hired by the what group was it?
The St. Louis Economic Partnership actually hired me, and the purpose of my job was to bridge the gap. My job was not to basically represent the city and misrepresent to the community. So I think that's the area that where there needs to be further clarification.
Do you think people
should read the book? They'll get a lot from that.
Do you think that your approach was balanced?
Definitely think it was balanced. I think that, you know, when you look at this scenario, you look at the fact that, you know, this community had been marginalized for many years. This was a power game. This is a power struggle. And if you look at the chapter where I'm calling out the mayor, we're looking at old mentalities and a lack of accountability. Someone needs to step in with a strong voice. We had a county executive that had been there that was so focused on his election that he couldn't even see, I mean, and wasn't present in the meeting. So somebody needed to be there and have that attitude.
And how did the community react to you?
Well, I think, you know, again, you have to step back and you have to look at how the, you know, there are different aspects of implicit bias and things that are used to discredit people and devalue them when they represent the wrong community. And what I mean by that is, you know, there's a large element of profit that's made off of this chaos. So, you know, when I get in and I'm actually challenging people's mentalities and I'm challenging them to be held accountable for the things that they've actually done wrong or for the community to be heard, there's this resistance that's taking place. So
you're going to leave it. There.
Yeah. Well, you know, like I said, I mean, I think that, you know, you folks need to consider that the work was very balanced because, like I said, you know, my job was to bridge the gap. And that means that both sides need to be heard.
You suggest in the book that and I think you go beyond suggesting it, that the reason that you had difficulty relating to the city officials and others was that you were black and that they could not deal with that.
Well, I say that there's definitely some challenges. There were instances, for example, where I would say something that, for example, that was a recommendation for the mayor or for the city council to implement. When I would say it, you know, it would seem like I'm talking to deer in headlights. However, I put it in an email and send it to a friend of mine, a white male, who sends the same email with the exact same text that I said just in front of them, and then they look at it and say, it's a great idea, let's move forward. So I think there is an element of racism or discrimination or lack of value of my opinion because of the color of my skin.
What is the task of community engagement, the reason, one of the reasons for which you were hired?
Well, again, like I said, to bridge the gap. So you're looking at a situation where you see that the city officials are ineffective at being able to communicate with the community.
But how? I mean, I understand that, but how do you bridge that gap?
Well, that's what I'm trying to explain to you. Yeah. So you see that one of the big issues is communication. So we start with, like, how do you express yourself and how do you disclose things that should be available to the public? well, there's an element of distrust that we have to address. So we need to be a little bit more transparent about the things that we're doing. So, for example, the last time I was on radio, you know, I talked about some of the things that were being planned. Well, it's unfair for law enforcement and everybody else to be sitting there going over their plan about how they may be evacuating or doing different things to protect only a certain class of folks, you know, white people in this particular area. And then, you know, the black community that's already been disenfranchised, that's already been ignored and has had a lack of investment or not being supported, don't get told anything. It's like, so you know, I get vilified for, you know, trying to make sure that there's a transparent or a balanced communication channel.
Do you feel that during this time there were other groups that are actively working against what you were trying to do?
I think there's definitely a system of oppression. There's elements of systemic racism that are going on, and I think there are institutions, corporations, and various individuals that are supporting that particular way of thinking.
You call yourself a victim of institutional racism, and we can back up a little bit because I think you feel perfectly justified in saying that. Tell us a little bit the Cliff Notes version of your early days. You had a tough start before you ever came to the St. Louis area.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, like I said in the book, you know, I overcame poverty, gang violence, being involved in the criminal justice system. So, you know, I've navigated through quite a few challenges, and I think, you know, the first chapter of the book, I go into, you know, how I overcame some of those challenges, and, you know, say for example, like when I got in trouble with the law, different things that happened there, where, you know, say for example, a judge or an attorney should have dismissed themselves, recused themselves because they had already represented themselves or, you know, represented cases against particularly family members or people that I was affiliated with, and they didn't. So there are you know, a lot of examples of where I've had to deal with racism, police brutality. I've never had a positive experience with law enforcement. You know, that started when I was a child. I was walking through the mall, I think 6 or 7 years old. I had a hood on my head. It was raining outside. Got slammed on the ground by police. You know what I mean? They thought I was stealing something. Wasn't stealing anything. So, you know, there are all kinds of examples of where I can go into, you know, discrimination that's happened in my life. I mean, you know, I live in the South.
Does that experience really qualify you for the job that you had here?
If you don't
get along with police and never have, here you are dealing with
police.
Yeah,
I don't think that has anything to do with that. I mean, because I also train law enforcement on de-escalation tactics and different things. So as an experienced government contractor, I've worked with everything from law enforcement to public health. So I think, you know, your attempts and others to discredit my abilities or my credentials is off base. There was never a question about my capabilities. As a matter of fact, I was the one that was selected to go in to do this body of work. Why would all these entities select me to go do that if I wasn't qualified?
How have I attempted to discredit your credentials?
Well, I think you've done it before. As I recall, the promo clip on the previous time that I was on public radio. You know, you made a statement about, you know, my misrepresentation on the education piece, which, you know, was clearly a soundbite from a news clip from another article that was patchwork. You know, when you run a company and you've got various people, like somebody's tweeting for me right now, like, do you think that I'm actually the one writing everything that has something to do with me? No, I don't. So there's been multiple attempts, but that's also historically what happens to black men in this country. So it's nothing new. Everything that happens here, everything that's happened with this particular media outlet and several others is an element of implicit bias. And that's indicative of what goes on in St. Louis.
Well, that's kind of, here we go again. I mean, if people aren't right with you according to your interpretation of that, then they're
wrong. No, it's not right with
me.
I mean, I think St. Louis has a mentality problem. I think Ferguson has a mentality problem. You got to consider these lawsuits from the DOJ wouldn't be happening if there wasn't a serious issue with tradition And tradition is black people are devalued here.
Well, you don't have to sell me on that. I know a little bit about that myself. Let's take a break. We'll do that now and come back. We have some calls and some emails. Devin James is our guest. He's the author of Inside Ferguson, A Voice for the Voiceless. By the way, Devin will be appearing tonight at Left Bank Books in the Central West End at 7 o'clock, where he'll talk more about the book, and I'm sure we'll sign a copy or two. Devin James is our guest. We're back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Welcome back. We'll continue our conversation with Devin James, the author of Inside Ferguson, A Voice for the Voiceless. Devin, part of the story of your early days includes the fact that you were shot yourself during a holdup attempt and that you also shot and killed a man during a home invasion. That is part of the story here in Ferguson, too, because as I read your story, you're saying that is the reason that they let you go. True? Is that your feeling?
No. I mean, I think the reason that I was let go, number one, like I said, was the old mentality. It's an unwillingness to take my advice on the reform and the changes that needed to be made. Again, as evident by the DOJ report, they have a problem with change. Change doesn't happen in your comfort zone, and you got to be willing to give up something to realize this change that needs to take place. The other piece, like I said, was accountability. And the third thing is I think I was the voice for the black community that no one seems to want to hear around here.
But as I read it in the exchange of emails, I guess it was Katie Jamberetz with whom you contacted you with regard to your dismissal, that was at least implied that it was your background that was the problem.
That was what was used. Know what I mean? As okay. A scapegoat situation. I mean, there was no lack of transparency as it relates to my background. There were several discussions about, you know, my background. Anybody who works for McDonald's gets a background check. So, I mean, for me to get to this level of government contracting and not have been screened to the T, I mean, this is absolutely absurd. And there were several media interviews where the chief of police as well as the mayor acknowledged that they had been briefed and that everyone knew about my background. So that was BS. Yep. That was complete BS, and that was a typical character assassination on a black male.
Right. Let's take some calls. We have a number of people who want to get into the conversation. We'll start with a caller from Ferguson. Ron will join us. Go ahead, Ron. You're on the air with Devin James.
Hey, I want to say, this was the biggest media mess in the 21st century. I do not blame this young man. Probably in retrospect, I did not know until today that the St. Louis Partnership had brought him in. And I think that was part of the problem. The city of Ferguson should have had someone already capable of being a spokesperson for them. And I've had some run-ins with the former mayor that recently passed about these diversity issues. But if I was in charge, I would have had featured some of the people who actually lived there for 20 and 30 years versus allowing people from all over the country to come in and have press conferences. And they would call one part of Ferguson downtown Ferguson, and the part that they were in that most people that lived there didn't even know that was a part of Ferguson. So I think it was a very complicated mess. They did not help the situation by allowing all these outside spokespersons. You had an alderman coming from St. Louis speaking on behalf of the city of Ferguson, where his crime rate is 10 times what Ferguson is, and unemployment is 3 times. And the lack of businesses is probably, he's probably got 10% of the businesses that Ferguson had. And then I remember once they had a cop from St. Louis City that had shot 11 people before he was put off the force. So he's going to come out and tell us how to run things?
Ron,
that's what the problem was.
Ron, thank you for the call. Let's get a response from Devin.
Hey, I just want to say, Ron, thank you for your call. I agree with you that we definitely should have had some people from Ferguson involved. That's actually one of the things that I push for. And also, let me clarify my role there. My role was never to be the spokesperson. As a matter of fact, the reason that I ended up speaking was because several of the leaders, Katie Jambritz included, advised me to step up and speak. I rejected speaking on behalf of the city multiple times, and I also had various efforts to try to discover or position a spokesperson. But you know, we weren't able to get a spokesperson, and it just so happens that the mayor and various other folks within the administration, everything that they said was inappropriate. So, you know, I decided to speak for them just because I didn't want any more attacks on the black community or any more insensitive or culturally irrelevant statements made that were damaging relations that we were trying to build on the ground.
Ron, thank you for the call. Let's take another one. This time it'll be Keith. He's calling from Alton. Go ahead, Keith.
Hey, Don. You know, I keep hearing that Ferguson is running out of money. They say they can't pay for the reforms the DOJ is asking for. They're now asking for two new tax increases. And I see this, and it makes me question the decisions they've made, like hiring public relations firms or the recent $1,300 per hour law firm to negotiate a consent decree that they themselves then rejected. And I wonder if you could talk about the way Ferguson budgeted money for cleaning up their image, but refuses to pay to clean up their unconstitutional police and courts.
Sure. So first, I never got paid, not by Ferguson or the Economic Partnerships. As a matter of fact, we have litigation going on now for what we should have been paid for the services we were supposed to provide. Or that we provide it. But as far as their budget, I mean, it's just basically it's ridiculous. We talked about various ideas, and we gave them a lot of ways that they could revise their revenue crisis or whatever, including turning unused city property into minority-owned business incubators that could advance social equity through entrepreneurship. This would basically give businesses the same support that the St. Louis Economic Partnership gives to all the white businesses in Clayton and South County, which would spur economic growth in the black community and eliminate some of the low-wage jobs. It would also increase license fees and business taxes. We talked about cutting non-essential services like producing the street fest, the farmer's market, not to take those things away from the community, but basically they could open it up and have contractors provide those services and eliminate all that wasteful spending. And put out a procurement and have a different company come in to build, manage it, promote it, and collect additional fees and revenues through sponsorships. So, I mean, we presented a lot of things, and then you got these ridiculous severance packages that they're paying. We talked about restructuring pensions and loans. So, I mean, as far as the money is concerned, oh, they got the money. There's tons of ways. They just need to be creative and find another way other than crippling the black community.
We have an email from Cassandra who writes, do you think Mayor Knowles negotiated with the DOJ in good faith, or having experience with the way he thinks or operates, do you think he may have participated in the negotiations to stall and delay? And she has another comment here, which I'll save until you answer that.
I think if he was actually present, he probably wasn't paying attention. He's ill-equipped. He needs to step down. I've made that recommendation several times. I just don't think he has what it takes to lead the community forward. I don't think he's the right person. So,
all right. The other part of Cassandra's comment here is not flattering, but she says, do you think you do damage to the field of public relations when you breach the confidences of clients, particularly when they're in a crisis mode, by writing a tell-all book afterwards?
Yeah, I think, what we're talking about here is integrity in leadership. And so integrity is doing the right thing when nobody's looking, you know. So I'll leave that with that. As far as public relations, just before this particular account, I was getting all kinds of accolades and praise from different folks in the public relations community about my experience and about my work. So coming into this situation where, everybody who was involved basically gets bruised and battered and you know, they used me as a scapegoat. I really don't think that's a fair approach to take towards me or my ability or whatever. So, plus my role was not public relations. So, I mean, I think if you have my role correct, you can send me a direct question.
All right. Do you feel like you're on the defensive still?
No. I mean, yeah. I think right now what we're just trying to do is get the narrative straight. And yeah. I think if the narrative that was driven basically mischaracterized me, put me in the wrong role, didn't allow the folks who should have been accountable for what they did. Common Ground is the firm that was handling public relations. Elasticity is the firm that was handling marketing. We were the subcontractor. So if you put everything in the right perspective, then you get an understanding of who was actually supposed to be doing what and who was doing it up to the point when I came into the picture.
And your relationship with those organizations, Common Ground and Elasticity, was not the best, I gather.
Well, I mean, everybody was all friends before. You know what I mean? This is politics. So there are a lot of people who don't want to take accountability for their role. I mean, Common Ground set up a lot of media interviews that, you know, where they, you know, put the mayor in a position to inflame the black community across this country with his rhetoric and his inability to see the racial divide. And I think that's whose ability to do public relations should be challenged.
Yeah. We've only got a little over a minute left, but you write of Common Ground that the woman who heads the organization, Denise, she put her own firm's reputation and interests ahead of Ferguson, an all-white firm with no cultural understanding of minority concerns and anger.
Yeah, that's what I wrote.
Would you, in the minute we have left, would you do anything differently if you had to go back and take this assignment on now?
No. I think that God ordered my steps. Everything that happened in the order in which it was supposed to happen. I learned a lot from this. I think that the world learned a lot from this. I think that everything that happened the way it's supposed to happen. So,
what's the most positive thing to come out of it in 15 seconds, if you can?
The most positive thing about it is that the protest got the conversation at the national level. Everything that happened brought the elements of institutional racism and implicit bias to the forefront. So now that we have the ugly monster out, we can talk about it. We can have that honest and open dialogue.
That's exactly what we're doing. And you'll be doing it tonight at 7 o'clock at Left Bank Books in the Central West End.
Yes, I will.
Devin, thanks so much for being with us. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Right. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.